I'm Elena.
I'm Grant.
And this is Whiskers. We share knowledge regarding SeaQuest.
How are you, dear?
I'm okay.
Okay. How are you, dog?
She is sleepy.
Told you we'd talk about her. So.
I see what you did there.
I am devious and sneaky in my ways.
Yeah.
I thought we should talk about Captain Bridger's namesake.
His namesake.
He is Nathan Hale Bridger. So yes. Clearly he is named for Nathan Hale.
Okay.
Hero of the American Revolution.
Okay.
A spy going behind enemy lines in the Battle of New York.
Oh.
Whereupon he was found out and captured and executed.
Oh.
And his famous last words, my only regret is that I have but one life to give for my country.
Oh.
Nathan Hale.
Disney didn't make a movie about him.
No. No, they didn't. He's the state hero of Connecticut, Nathan Hale.
I haven't been to Connecticut. I just know about Johnny Tremaine. I'm sorry.
I don't think he's real. I'm pretty sure that one's made up. I think there's a book, and then they made a movie of a fake book boy.
Maybe, but I like the movie. I was really obsessed with that movie as a kid.
But perhaps, perhaps Captain Nathan Hale Bridger is named for the USS Nathan Hale.
Oh, the boat that's named after the dude?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think Bridger might be named after the boat because, of course, it is a nuclear-powered submarine.
Ah.
Carrying ballistic missiles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm,
it could be both. They took the Nathan from the one and the Hale from the other.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
Tell me about the sub. When was it, is it still out there? When was it in action?
Interestingly, it was commissioned.
Okay.
The day after Kennedy was shot.
Oh.
So it was a pretty low-key affair. Not a lot of pomp and circumstance.
A little damper on the parade there.
Their hearts weren't really in it.
No.
And stricken 25 years later in the mid-80s.
Oh, okay.
So no, the Cold War submarine is not still with us.
I can't go walk on it somewhere in some harbor.
No. In my brief research, it looks like it wasn't engaged in any notable combat, you know, which is good. It was the Cold War.
I mean, yeah.
If our subs are firing ballistic missiles, something went really bad.
It's not great.
Really bad.
I do know where our closest fallout shelter is. Like,
that's true.
Just up the street, a couple blocks. We're good. I really need to go into that Park District building and explore and see if I can actually find where the fallout shelter is and if it's, like, accessible. If you have a sign
like
on
with
the...
a ramp or just it can be accessed?
Can I get to it?
Okay.
Like, is there a door that's, like, fallout shelter and it's probably locked, but, like, that's where it is? Because if you're going to have that sign on the outside of your building, I feel like it should be accessible. Still be there inside. Not just like storage. It's probably just storage.
Sure. So what do you think it says that Captain Bridger is named for either an unimportant submarine or a revolutionary patriot?
Like that he's named for that in the sense of the writers naming him that or the sense of like his parents naming him that.
Either, whatever comes to mind.
Because my question is when is the character of Nathan Hale Bridger born, and did the sub exist already?
Early 60s, right? Because, like, he was 7 during Woodstock or whatever. Like, early 60s.
Yeah, okay.
So that means he predates the submarine.
He predates the sub. So if we're talking about him,
he can't be named for the submarine.
The world of SeaQuest.
In universe, he cannot be named for the submarine.
He's named.
Which is a crazy thing to do to a child. Name them after a submarine.
Yes. So we know in that world, he is named after the person.
Yes. The state hero of Connecticut.
Now, for the writers of the show, could go either way.
Right.
I'm going with Nathan's one and Hale's the other.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Okay, which is which?
Flip a coin.
I don't want to flip a coin. If I'm thinking about television shows and someone flips a coin, I'm having a bad time.
True. Nathan's the dude and Hale's the submarine.
Sure, sure.
Because you're not going to give your child the first name of a submarine.
That's ridiculous.
But the middle name.
Mm-hmm. That can come from anywhere.
It can come from anywhere. Yeah. Do the fuck that you want with that.
I regret I have but one name to give to Captain Bridger.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, also, who's going by Hale? Like.
Anyway, we're here to talk about episode 4 of the second season of Sequest DSV. It is titled Vapors. It is written by executive producer David J. Burke, who last wrote Higher Power and The Stinger.
Yeah.
It is directed by Les Sheldon, who directed Abalon and Nothing But the Truth. And this is, of course, the writer-director pairing that brought us The Regulator.
It makes sense.
There is an elements. Energy, you know? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You know, this is of a pair with The Regulator.
Yes. Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it as good? No.
What is?
What is? What else will be as good as bananas?
How about a wonderful guest turn from a legendary comedy performer?
Bananas? So, this episode starts off with the Sequest in its home port.
Mm-hmm. We're always docked.
We love to be docked. Apparently, we are docked now. We do a mission, we come back, and we're docked. Mm-hmm. Which is weird because everyone's so pumped about shore leave in this episode that we'll get there.
Y'all
but still,
were in SeaWorld 2 weeks ago.
Like, you're always docked. It's always shore leave. I'm so confused. But Lucas is having a little chat with Darwin in mm-hmm, his bedroom mm-hmm. Through the window, explaining what money is to Darwin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How it is exchanged for goods and services, how it is received in exchange for labor.
Yes, and he's using the example of, like, you get fish when you do stuff. So if a dollar of money equals one fish, like, how many fish would you get for $10? And Darwin can do math, so that's
yes,
cool.
Yeah.
But he's also like, this don't make sense. Like,
I'll just get fish.
And Lucas is like, what if you can't and I make you work for them? And he's basically like, that's stupid.
Darwin says, that sucks. In response to Lucas refusing to imagine a world that does not work on market logic.
Yeah.
Come on, Lucas.
And so with that sucks, Darwin swims away because he's like, fuck this conversation. I am not going to buy into your capitalism, Lucas. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm going to go get me a fish with my freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And so he swims away. And then suddenly, like, Tony's there.
Just
in the tube.
Swimming through the tube, and Lucas is like, hey, stop teaching my dolphin the mildest of naughty language. It's a slippery slope, Piccolo.
But then a call comes in, and it is, Lucas goes and answers the vid link, mm-hmm. and it is not a call for him, it is a call for Tony.
Mm-hmm.
By a dude who sees Tony in the background. It's really good imagery on this vid phone. And they're like,
It's Sequest. They have the best equipment.
I guess, but like, I don't know. Every time we see like a vid phone, it's like really small. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how can you see that far and that clearly in the background? But he's like, what's he doing back there? And he's like, oh, he's swimming. Why?
I love the line, swimming, what for? Why? Like, how? I don't know how to answer that. Like, because, I guess.
Because he wants to? But this dude is like, man, I need Tony. Mm-hmm. Tony's got to come meet me. He's got to meet me. Tell him Nick has got trouble.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's got to go to Buddy's. And of course, Lucas takes down this message. Nick here is played by legendary comedy performer Dom DeLuise
uh-huh.
from Cannonball Run, from so many Mel Brooks movies, from all the Don Bluth movies. He's Dom fucking DeLuise. I don't need to tell you who he is.
It was Bring Your Dad to Work Day.
And they got a twofer.
I'm guessing they didn't pay him. He was just like, I just want to see my boys in action. I'll do it for free.
Can I bring a bonus boy while we're
at it? Just bring the whole family. This is grandma and the cousins.
So that brings us to the new-ish opening credits, and then back to, yes, an establishing shot of the Sequest at dock. They're always docked now.
Yes. And we get a quick little check-in with Ortiz, checking in with Brody and Ford, who just got out of the gym all sweaty, mm-hmm. and is like, hey, we're gonna have a great leave. We're gonna meet up on that boat. Yeah.
They're gonna cruise for babes.
Cruise for babes.
Cruising for babes. That thing that you can always imagine Ford doing.
Ford just wants to be included.
Is there a ballet? Is that where he's looking for babes?
Brody told him it was a water ballet.
That's what
it was. And he's like, okay, yeah, we can go. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's called, the water ballet's called Cruising for Babes? Okay.
I prefer the classics myself, but, you know, beggars can't be choosers.
So meanwhile, over in the hydroponic chamber, mm-hmm. Bridger takes Wendy there, I guess, for the first time. She's never looked inside.
She's head of the science department?
Yeah, she didn't know this existed.
She's never checked in on the hydroponics lab? Just like a survey or anything?
She's instantly so sweaty.
Well, as they crack open the door, the little computer voice announces that it's 95 degrees and 90% humidity. Yeah, yeah, she would be.
I just love that it is so instant. So instant. There is no, like, we're going to get sweaty as the scene goes on. No, we are sweaty now.
But if you want these conditions, just go outside. It's Florida. You're there. You're in it.
And so they're walking around this very tiny fucking closet that serves mm-hmm. as the hydroponics chamber.
So it's a good thing part of the demonstration is about how much you can grow in such a tiny amount of space.
True. They're talking about, you know, the plants and the lighting and the bird songs. And she's like, oh, does that stimulate the plants? And he's like, I don't know, but they stimulate me.
This is Bridger's new pet project aboard the Sequest, apparently. And he is giving the behind the seeds tour.
Yes, of like, look at this lettuce growing in the water. Mm-hmm. This could solve world hunger. You know, lettuce that has so many calories.
Well, he talks about the famines and those poor people living on coarse grain. And don't they deserve something with flavor? Like,
it's lettuce.
Yeah, I guess, but
I would go for like a tomato or an onion.
If you want to fix like famine, go talk to Lucas and have him think about something beyond market forces. Come on.
True.
Yeah.
True.
This old time romance piano is playing in the background.
Fucking hate all of it. Because then you know what happens is they're talking about like lettuce saving the world.
They spray down together.
For some reason, they have a bottle of mist.
It's their cooling spray, as if it's not humid enough here, 95%.
Bridger sprays himself, and then Wendy takes it and sensually sprays herself. And then like pats herself. I fucking hate it. I hate it so much. So fucking weird.
In this scene, we learn yet another of the elusive facts about the late Carol Bridger.
Mm-hmm.
She was big into hydroponics, and so
apparently this was her hydroculture was her dream.
Yeah, yeah, and so Mr. Nathan Hale Bridger is carrying that in the heart of his new ship, the Sequest 2.
Yes, and so he talks about how he misses her, and Wendy's mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. "So this is for her to keep her alive. What about your life? Jeez, Nathan, get over it."
It's not like she's dead or anything. Oh, wait.
It's not like you should miss your dead wife. Like, you really need to live and stop, like, living in the water lettuce.
My question, where are the pollinators?
There aren't any.
In this date, they should be dodging bees the whole time. Very sweaty bees.
No, instead we're dodging feelings mm-hmm. because we can't let a man miss his dead wife.
It is like the land pavilion at Epcot. It's someone's job to come in at night and like physically dust the pollen.
Maybe. I'm surprised he doesn't offer her a slice of cucumber on a toothpick.
That's what happens when Piccolo's in trouble. He has to dust the stamens.
Yeah. Just like rub the flowers together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're the boy flower. You're the girl flower. Now kiss.
Sensual piano music plays. As you circle the flowers together. Just rub that pollen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Rub it good. Oh, yeah, baby.
So speaking of Tony Piccolo, he emerges.
Like a mermaid.
Like from the lines of lettuce. Why is this water connected to the tubes?
It shouldn't be.
Are they growing the lettuce in salt water?
Apparently.
Does Darwin come by and nibble the lettuce?
Yes, this is where he comes at night when he wants a little snack. That's maybe. Why he's like, fuck you, Lucas. I can go eat lettuce right now. I don't even need to go outside.
I think that's the incredible breakthrough that they can grow all this produce in salt water.
What if there is also, like, a fish tank? You know how, like, Living with the Land their fish? What if they're also growing fish to feed Darwin in case, you know, they can't come back?
Right.
Or let him out.
Right.
There's
they
the
should.
Does Tony like to swim in the fish tank, too?
Ah, yes, his people.
Do the fish occasionally get a field trip day where they are let loose in the aqua tubes to, like, go have an adventure?
It's like the running of the bulls, but it's a lot of trout.
Yes. Yes.
I love the idea of Tony Piccolo deciding one day that he needs to get in touch with his fish heritage and experience fish culture.
That's why he was swimming with Darwin earlier. He was like, Darwin, teach me your ways.
Yeah.
What are we doing today? Oh, we're going to go, like, swim this way through the tube? Okay. Yeah.
Darwin's a little freaked out because he's like, I don't have gills. This guy's a moron. A different thing.
I'm not a fish.
Not a fish.
Sucks. I eat fish. Should I eat you?
He just starts nibbling Piccolo's fingers.
So Tony pops up and he's all, and like Bridger and Wendy like grab each other in shock. And so he's just kind of like, okay, I'm going to like go now, as you clench each other in this dark and sweaty room.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he's got he can hear the piano music is the thing.
Obviously. Yes, that is not just like TV piano music. That is like piped into the room piano music.
Oh, I see.
The plants like it.
Remember along with the
rubbin,
bird song.
The rubbin. It's the hand gesture, isn't it?
Yes.
You don't like my little hand gesture? Of the flower rubbin?
I will say it doesn't play great on a audio medium.
Probably not. But I can't talk about it without doing the gesture. So Tony goes to his room and he's like, hey, Lucas, what's up?
Yeah.
And Lucas is like, who's Nick? He's in trouble. So what you gonna do? And Tony's like, he's always in trouble. Like, I'm not gonna do anything. Says some comments about how, like, you know, he only calls when he needs something. Never just like, I miss you, pal. And Lucas is like, oh,
he's your dad.
Daddy issues. I know daddy issues. I have daddy issues, too.
They're dad buddies.
It's like, you're from a dysfunctional family. Me, too. Bonding.
And Piccolo's like, how'd you figure that out? And Lucas shrugs and is all, well, you know, there was that time my dad almost destroyed human civilization.
And also, like, I haven't had a relationship with him at all, and he dumped me here when I was like 14. So, you know.
Yeah, I got a dad too.
And so Tony's like, oh my god, so you get it. You know what it's like. So you should come with me. And he's like, why would I do that? Well, because I'm going to do something stupid and I need an excuse not to. And he's like, oh, so I'm the excuse? He's like, no, you're my friend.
And Lucas has never been told he's someone's friend.
No!
Not since Hacker Camp, at least.
I love, in this episode, how sincere and quick you realize Tony is to have friends.
Mm-hmm.
He makes friends.
Yeah.
He thinks you're his friend immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder how this episode would have played if it came second and you bump the aliens back a week.
Oh.
This episode could be the dawn of the Paella Boys.
Yeah.
Yes.
This would make so much more sense. This would make so much more sense because, like, in this episode, his interacting with Lucas and Dagwood makes so much more sense to come before that episode.
It's establishing the bond, like we talked about in Such Great Patience, not Such Great Patience, in The Fear That Follows.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I could imagine them being, like, immediately back-to-back.
Yeah.
Like, after the big barbecue, they go out for late-night paella, and then aliens are
there. Yes! Oh, my God! That would be amazing! I want that. In the future, I'm just going to watch them flopped.
Yeah,
it
obviously.
It makes so much more sense. It's so much better. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Lucas is very touched by being called a friend.
Yes.
Tony better watch out. He might soon be like, Daddy.
But I do think that is a big difference for Lucas's position in the ship.
Mm-hmm.
Is season one, he's everyone's kid. He's everyone's nephew. He is a child.
Yes.
Like, the closest thing he has to a friendly relationship is Krieg. And Krieg is doing cool uncle shit.
Yeah.
And not friend shit.
Yeah.
And now, he's got Tony, he's got Dagwood. It's a very different thing. So he's coming up and finding peers and not mentors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because even, like, Ortiz and them, they still looked at him as, like, a little brother in season one and not a peer.
As soon as there's danger, it's, I'll protect the child.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So Lucas is like, okay, fine, I'll go. And Tony's like, great, you should change, and you should wear the dumbest fucking sunglasses I've ever seen.
These were all the rage in fake 2019. It's fine. He looks super cool.
So Bridger goes to a weird torture chamber where the steam machine has been placed.
It's not in his room anymore because his room is redesigned. It's a whole new set. It's a special confessional chamber with, like, sound baffling textures all
and
over the walls.
One chair in the middle of the room.
It looks like he's going to be interrogated by Cardassians.
Yes. Like, that's why I said it looks like a torture chamber. And instead of having, you know, the doctor guy that we know,
it's the professor's wife.
Yes.
Who is also a professor. She looks tenured to me, but this is a new hologram we've never seen before.
And so she's like, oh man, you have an infatuation with someone. I can tell. And he's like, oh man, I'm too old for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's too old for an infatuation. Even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And he's like, you know, I dated her mother 30 years ago. And I'm like, yeah, Bridger, you should listen to yourself right now.
They must have met, right? Like, Bridger swings by, picks up a sexy Lexi to go dancing. And, like, 6-year-old Wendy is there, right? They must have met, right?
She was at daycare. She was with Grandma. Because remember, later in this episode, Bridger's like, oh yeah, I met your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's... Grandma was babysitting.
Okay.
And she was already in bed.
Wendy was tucked in.
She was already tucked in, but we met Grandma.
If it weren't for the Grandma bit, I could imagine it was an entirely ship and base-based romance.
Mm-hmm.
But if he met her mom, he met her daughter, unless Rosalind Allen is playing way younger than her actual age and was not born 30 years ago.
Here's the deal, Bridger.
Which makes this so much creepier.
If we have to have this conversation, the relationship shouldn't be happening. Dear TV writers, if we need to be having this fucking conversation, these relationships shouldn't be happening. Jesus fucking Christ. And so the professor lady is like, you need to, like, go talk to a human being instead of me. Because basically they need to tell you you're fucking crazy right now.
Captain, I'm a machine. I can't deal with this shit. I don't like it.
You're being a creeper.
They definitely met. They met when she was, like, 7 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like it. Bridger would never. He would never.
He is. He is right now.
The Bridger I know wouldn't. I don't believe in this Bridger. So Wendy's packing to go on leave, and she heads to the Maglev, and when it opens...
It's rush hour. Every named character is in this.
Everyone is going on leave. And Tony's there with all the boys, telling them all about what he saw in the sea lettuce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she's very awkward and is like, I'll wait for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They disembark, and we get the dock of the Sequest. Sure. It has its own sign.
Mm-hmm.
It has a fancy ass sign.
They're always parked here. It's their designated parking spot.
They have their designated spot with a big Sequest sign. Everyone knows. And so
they do tours. I mean, they used to do a lot of tours, but
a jumpsuit for you and a jumpsuit for you. They've ran out of jumpsuits. There's too many. Yeah. They're in dock too much to have jumpsuits now.
It's not special anymore. They just bring in people by the dozen.
Yeah.
And show them where to turn the key to fire the nukes and everything.
Like you do.
Like you do.
Lucas and Tony immediately run into Dagwood, who is, you know, doing his job, cleaning stuff.
Carrying heavy things.
And they're like, hey, you should drive your golf cart.
It's a golf cart.
It's a golf cart.
It's a golf cart with, like, canvas sides.
We got places to go. Let's go be bros.
They ask him why he's doing labor during leave, and his reply is, quote, labor is my life. So I guess Lucas told him about commercial relations, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope Dagwood's getting paid. They head off to Buddy's Smokehouse.
Yes, yes. And you hear that name and you think, ah, a restaurant. No, no, no.
No.
This is the business model of the future because smoking is semi-banned.
Yes.
You have to go to a special place where they put you in a glass box to smoke.
Yes. And outside the glass box in the rest of the building, it's a dance hall and bar.
And roller rink.
And roller rink with a ska band playing.
Yes, yes. This is a ska group from Tampa. They formed in 1992. They ran for like 15 years. Called MAGA Dog.
Yes.
They released 5 albums, first on Moon Ska Records and then transferring to Citrus Records.
Ah. Very nice. I'm so glad this is a real band.
Yes.
This is so good.
You can go listen to MAGA Dog right now. It was not such an unfortunate name in 1992. They didn't know. It's not their fault.
Yeah. So Lucas and Tony and Dagwood go in. They scope out the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tony's scoping out this lady in a green dress.
So's Lucas. They're all like, look at that hot, almost middle-aged woman over there.
It's a heck of a dress. The camera lingers on this dress in many scenes to come.
Very true.
Yes.
Very true. They walk up to the smoker's window.
Where you have to grab a special little microphone to talk through the glass.
To the person on the other side.
I have seen in the like smoking, non-smoking section era.
Uh-huh.
Restaurants that had this.
Full glass?
Full glass.
Oh, I never went to it one was that like, had full glass.
I'm trying to remember.
That would have been amazing.
It was like a McDonald's in a mall in Canada, I think. Like when I went to Toronto for a vacation with my parents as a child.
I just remember all the places that had like the half walls. Because like that does anything to fucking separate
air,
the
to
two.
Air?
Yeah, like, let's just put up, like, a you know, 2-inch glass partition next to the booths, because that will protect you. the air of, like, smoking inside was so fucking weird. Because, like, oh, do you want the smoking section or the non-smoking section? We want the non. Okay, we're going to set you 3 inches from the smoking section. Like, that makes a fucking difference.
The border has to go somewhere, you know? Perhaps all borders are fictions.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I like that they have old-timey mics.
I do love... I mean, I think the ska band brought them with them.
Well, yeah.
It's part of their kit.
Their aesthetic.
Well, I guess that'd be more New Swing Revival. But still, it's the same time. I love how much smoke they dump into these glass rooms.
It reminds me of that Torchwood miniseries, yeah. When like the aliens were like in the smoke boxes and you could just see like certain things.
Yeah.
It's almost on the verge
of
that.
It's Dom DeLuise in there.
Yes.
I don't think he could see the director.
I don't know. It's great though. You know, Tony goes up there and he's like, hey, you look good, like your mother. And, you know, trying to compliment his son. And then he's like, who's that? Is that Dagger? He's like, hey, he's my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Tony believes in friendship.
Yes.
Everyone's his friend.
And shutting down his father from using racial slurs.
Yes. And so he immediately, though, goes in on his dad. He's like, so what's your trouble? Did you get caught cheating again? And like explains to Lucas that his dad remarried his mom last year and immediately went and cheated on her. So he
like
got
at the wedding.
Yes. Like said the vows and then like cheated.
Yes.
And he,
like the coat check girl at the reception or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, well, come on. Like, are you going to help me? And Tony's just like, no, and like leaves, just storms off, leaving, and Lucas follows, leaving Dagwood behind, and Dagwood just like looks at him.
Yeah, yeah.
Stares him down a bit.
And he picks up the microphone, and like, we've talked about how we enjoy Peter DeLuise's performance.
Yes.
But I don't think we've specifically talked about the way he reads lines. And like the rhythm and the emphasis he places to like Dagwood is speaking while thinking the sentence. He's even speaking ahead of where his mind is in the sentence. And so it like bends the way he speaks in such a fun way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he says to Tony's dad that, you know, I imagine my father would be like you. Only with a brain.
Mm-hmm. And then he sets down the microphone and walks right out. And how nasty do you think Buddy smells?
Oh, it reeks. It reeks. It either absolutely just reeks of smoke or they're pumping in so much like Febreze type shit that it smells like the worst type of craft store that just has like potpourri shit everywhere.
I don't know what part of Central Florida, you know, this roller rink location is, but we're told it's in a rough part of town. So I don't think they're spraying down all those rental skates either. There's a lot of smells happening in this place.
Very sweaty.
Yeah.
Very sweaty. So Lucas is outside with Tony and is encouraging him to go back inside. And is like, your father is killing himself in there because he's smoking in a smokehouse. Mm-hmm. Go back in. Say your goodbye, call him dad, kind of get some closure.
The way people talk about tobacco in this episode, in the 2019 of the UEO, is that like, okay, it's cancer causing, but like immediately.
Yeah, like he's going to die tomorrow.
Like you would not smoke unless you were suicidal is the way they talk about it.
Here's the thing, though. If you are sitting in that place... It basically is.
There's
the whole point is to chain smoke with others locked in a box.
They need a mini one of those oxygen stations that they were blowing up.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's bad in there.
Tony does go back inside and he's, you know, goes to his dad and is like, okay, dad, what? Tell me what you want.
And there's this box. There's this very important box. He's got to just destroy whatever's in that box. Don't even worry about it. It's not illegal. The first question is, hey, what's up with this? His answer is, it's not illegal.
But then they are interrupted by the woman in the green dress marching up and demanding to know if he told them where the pills were.
She wants her pills. Where's my fucking pills?
Yes.
She wants some RU-268 pills, Swiss Oral Cosmetics.
Mm-hmm. Tony's just like, who are you? Like, what? What? Who are you?
What are you doing? I'm arguing with my philandering father. I would love to find out who you are, but one thing at a time, please.
And she's like, oh, well, my name is Marie. And he's like, Marie who? Marie Piccolo.
Huh?
And he's like, what?
And he turns to his dad and he says, are we Greek?
And he turns to Lucas and is like, Lucas, I think this is my mother.
Ha-ha, yes.
And this makes Lucas fall to the ground, crumple to the ground, because he was having explicit sexual thoughts about Tony's mom.
MILF used to mean something, goddammit. This lady is like 25. What are you talking about?
No, she's not.
They talk like she is.
They say she looks like she's 25. She looks like she's 48.
She's been spending a lot of time in Buddies.
Yeah.
It weathers you. It ages the skin.
Yeah.
She needs to take more of her Swiss pills. So Marie Piccolo is played here by Leslie Hope, who went on to be President Foster toward the end of the first season of Revolution.
Oh!
One of your favorite shows, dear.
Yeah, I really like Revolution. It has Charlie!
She has a recurring role as Secretary of the Navy in NCIS and its spinoffs.
Oh.
She was Jack Bauer's wife, Terry, in the first season of 24.
Oh.
Is she in the later seasons of 24? Well, let me tell you, things don't go great for Terry.
No.
But more recently, she is a director of television, things like the Snowpiercer show, the Netflix Lost in Space show, and the third episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Ooh!
Yeah.
Oh, I love Strange New Worlds.
That's the one where they have that disease, and number one is immune, and you find out her backstory and why she's immune.
Oh, yeah.
And Pike and Spock are down on the planet with all the energy ghosts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Strange New Worlds. It's great.
We've learned this about ourselves over the last 2 weeks.
Yes, it's really good. It's the best new Star Trek, I think.
Yeah, but then we watched
Lower Decks
Season 3, and we're like, oh, but...
But I really like Strange New Worlds, too.
The weird thing about this scene is while Tony Piccolo is reeling with the knowledge that the hot baby was checking out is his mother, he continues to check her out.
Yes.
More now than before.
Because he, like, drops down to make sure Lucas is okay. And Lucas just is like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Tony. I didn't know she was your mother. And this causes Tony to look at her and, like, check her out just more.
Up and down the legs as he is now, like, knee height.
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot the hell out of this dress, let me tell you.
Just stop looking at her like that. It's weird. So then, we have to go check in on O'Neill and Henderson.
Yes.
Who are on a date at a museum.
Enjoying some very Catholic art.
Well, O'Neill finishes his big gulp.
Uh-huh.
What museum are they at? No museum lets you walk around with just a
in
the fucking
galleries.
Big gulp in the gallery. Like, what the fuck? And so she's like, hey, do you understand this painting? And he's like, obviously, it's religious.
Well,
I'm the religion dude.
Well, he says it's obviously about the taboo of shipmates being in relationships.
Well, that too.
Which, no, it's super not.
No.
This is the most Catholic painting I've ever seen with a boat in it.
Yeah. But then he uses this thing to talk about, like, you know, it's not good to, like, date your crew member. Like, maybe we shouldn't do this. And she's like, why don't we just enjoy our date?
I love the bit where they continue to gossip about Dr. Smith and Captain Bridger.
Yes.
And O'Neill says something like, oh, well, I could never date a psych. I could never be with someone who would read my mind because then they wouldn't want to be with me. What do you think he means by this?
I hope he just means he thinks he's really fucking boring.
Yeah, either Tim O'Neill has really poor self-esteem or he's a serial killer.
Yes. Otherwise, he's really fucked up.
I couldn't be with a psychic. They turn me in.
They know my truths.
Tim, no.
So Wendy goes to Quest Club.
Quest Club.
There is a sign that says Quest Club. And I'm like, so is this a Navy pool?
It's some sort of spa. It is a place for luxury and relaxation.
And there are military people around.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know why it... Is it just... Okay, so with this being Sequest's, like, home dock, is there now a tourism industry around
people
this?
People to check out the Sequest.
Yes, because it uses the same font.
It explains all the signage. That's true.
So is this like the hotel that popped up close by for the tourists who are coming to see the Sequest?
If you stay at the hotel, you can get your tour a half hour earlier than the people who just drive up.
Yeah.
And
the reason they don't give out jumpsuits anymore is they sell them in the gift shop.
That naturally.
Yeah. Obviously, you can get a little stuffed dolphin, too.
Yeah. But the markup on those is crazy.
It's a lot, but it's pretty great.
If you can get someone to drive you to the outlet in the mall, though, you can get, like, last season's plush Darwins for pretty reasonable price.
They also have, like, you know, at, like, hotel, like, gift shops and stuff, they have, like, the rocks, the shiny rocks for the kids. And you get your little pirate bag.
Oh, you mean Krieglite?
Yeah, well, I was going to say that in... That they've now found little, tiny little squids that have smaller squid, like glowy squid poops. And so they just have them pooping all day and they're throwing them out there in the little thing. And the kids are like, fuck yeah, shoving this in my bag.
Pooping all day. They're always pooping, these squids.
Well, they're little, so they have very little intestinal tracts. And so it just goes whoosh.
Anyhow.
But you're not allowed to buy it until your checkout day. It's a parting souvenir.
Sure. And it's the opposite of a lei when you go to visit like Honolulu or whatever.
And no returns allowed.
No returns.
No. So there's just like kids that are like, you know, 3 days at home now. Like, why does my souvenir smell, Mom?
Don't put that in your mouth, Joey. Do not put that in your mouth.
They also, you know how sometimes also, like, gift shops and stuff, they have, like, the really fancy displays with, like, the really pricey stuff?
Sure. The Swarovski.
That's where they have some of the artifacts from the Library of Alexandria for sale.
Yeah, but it's got this guy's fingerprints all over it. It's gross.
That's why they're for sale.
The Libyans don't even want this one.
So Wendy goes to the Quest Club to go, like, lay by the pool, read her book.
Do spa things, relax,
but
vacation.
She is too overwhelmed by her psychic abilities.
This is the human static we were hearing about last week. Here it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so this causes her to jump into the pool and immediately go to the pool waterfall to drown out the sound.
I like this scene. This is an effective scene. It is well directed. It communicates with framing and cut, and I think Rosalyn Allen does a really good job. I like this scene. I'm planting my flag. I am defending this scene.
It's fine. I'm just like, you've been on a submarine with, like, how many hundreds of people?
The water helps.
The water helps. Okay.
We learned all about it last week.
So we go, Ortiz is getting on the boat with Brody and Ford. Bridger's going to his, like, own boat, like, have a good time, boys.
Ortiz is wearing a Kangol hat.
Yes.
And Ford has a little, like, straw-woven cowboy hat.
Yes.
Yeah. And
no one has enough sunscreen on.
No.
So they have a little thing of, like, hey, do you really think, like, Bridger's, like, getting on with Wendy, and Ford's like, oh, come on, guys, since when do we believe what Piccolo says? Which is true.
This is the best de-escalation that anyone, like, could possibly come up with.
Thank you. Thank you, someone, for remembering that. So back at Buddy's, Tony is going off on his parents.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just all screaming at each other and arguing, and she's insisting she looks 25, and I'm like, no, you don't, but it's okay. And Lucas is just like, man, dude, your parents do sound married. Tony's just like, man, I don't know how to deal with this, you know? And you totally know what he's saying without saying it is that he doesn't know how to deal with his mom being fucking hot. But then a bouncer comes in and is like, hey, you guys got to break this up. And you know who that bouncer is? That bouncer is another DeLuise.
This is David DeLuise, the third of three DeLuise brothers. Dom DeLuise and all three of his children are not only in this episode, they are in the same moment. They are all together in this scene. He would go on to voice Coop, the main character in Megas XLR. He would play Jerry Russo in Wizards of Waverly Place and its associated spin-offs and crossovers. Yes, all three of the DeLuise brothers and their father are here together. Also, at least according to IMDb trivia, I don't know their source, the infant Gelf in the episode Daggers was played by David DeLuise's baby daughter.
Oh.
So when Dagwood says, I'm an uncle, the actor is that baby's uncle as well.
Aww.
Yeah, aww. Yeah.
The DeLuises all look so alike.
Yes.
Though, like,
David and Peter especially.
Well, I was going to say, except for, like, Tony. Like, it's there, but, like, when you see them all together, you're like, wow, some genes skipped you. Like, it's there, but it's the rest of you are all so similar.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I mean, one of Michael, Tony Piccolo, yeah. One of his early roles was playing Peter DeLuise's younger brother in an episode of 21 Jump Street.
Mm.
Before he returned in the later seasons to be his own main character.
Oh my goodness.
In 21 Jump Street.
Goodness.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. In this scene, I like the part where Papa Piccolo is like, it's like putting aluminum siding on a house. It looks good, but the pipes inside are all rusty. Don't tell me about your wife's rusty pipes, you freak. You freak.
That's really rude.
That's so rude.
It's not like your pipe's much better. So Lucas and Tony and Dagwood leave. Mm-hmm. They're like, we're not fucking dealing with this. They rush out, they get in the golf cart, and they drive away.
And Dagwood's all like, looking good is good. You should be pleased. And Tony says, I am pleased. That's what makes me sick. He keeps going on about how much he wants to bang his mom.
He had a lot of thoughts at the beginning that
and
now
he's still having
him.
Them.
Yeah. So, over on the boys' boat.
Boy boat, boy boat!
Ford and Brody are using binoculars to look at babes and making Ortiz drive.
And every time they talk about a babe in particular, Ortiz is like, hey, pass over those binoculars. And they're like, well, she's not that great. And ha 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 ha, because they're not going to give up their babe-checking binoculars.
Rude.
Whenever Ford is checking out the ladies, it's for, you know, whether they file their taxes in January.
Yeah.
That's what gets him going.
Yeah.
Especially if it's itemized. Well, rawr.
What they should have given him was, like, opera glasses to really go with the whole, like, water ballet thing.
Why isn't he wearing a blazer and a belt? I know how Ford dresses to go to the beach.
So Bridger takes a jet ski boat to his new house on a beach, which is a big step up from the shack he had.
Yeah. And the romantic piano is back as he looks over framed photos of the late Carol Bridger. And this is where I realized what the romance theme of Sequest reminds me of.
Yeah.
Bella's Lullaby.
Ah! Oh my gosh, yes.
I'm right.
Yeah, it's a little bit. It's like you're waiting for it to start.
There's some snatches of Bella's Lullaby.
And so he talks to the photos like, uh-huh. Oh, you know, I've been told I'm supposed to talk to a human being, and I haven't really talked to anyone since you've been gone. Excuse me? Excuse me, sir. What about Westphalen?
What about Westphalen?
What is this bullshit that you have not talked to a human being? Even if we're not talking about it in that way, like, you fucking talked to Lucas. Like, yeah. What the fuck, dude?
He was constantly talking about perspectives and relationships and emotions with Westphalen. And in the last episode this scriptwriter wrote, they went on dates.
They went on dates.
Continually interrupted dates, and then the world almost exploded, but they were trying.
What is this acting like this is the first woman he's taken an interest in since his wife died? Mm-hmm. Because even before he started smushing face with Westphalen, there were like several ladies that were all like, hey.
There was the psychic in the Alexandria episode, frankly.
Uh-huh.
He's got a type. It's psychics half his age.
Like, Jesus! This is the shit that, like, pisses me off with the whole, like, forced relationship thing between them, is the complete erasure of Westphalen.
Mm-hmm.
I still wouldn't like it, but I feel like I could deal with it better if we weren't trying to erase all of that.
Right.
And make it this whole, like, oh, Wendy's gonna fix him and, like, cure his soul and put his heart back together. Fuck that. Like, and we didn't even do any of that shit with, like, Westphalen, right?
No,
there was a little bit of, like, having to, yes, process some emotions, but none of this, like, oh, I'm a broken man and I'll never love again. Like, no.
Like, I never doubted that Bridger deeply loved and deeply misses his late wife through all of season one. That is clear. But any time when, like, Bridger's broken soul comes up or is even hinted at, it's his son.
It's about his son.
Who is apparently maybe not dead now. but this gets into what I think this episode is really about. Like, there is a plot. Like, the Piccolo family drama is the A plot as much as there is one. But it really is, like, this slice of life episode to see all of our characters and what they're like when they're not dealing with a crisis, when they're just being people.
Mm-hmm.
And for the new cast, it's really getting to know them. This is the biggest Henderson episode in the whole season.
Yes.
This is what Tony's doing aside from wisecracks. There's a lot of humanizing Dagwood when our Gelf's human isn't the point. It's like, no. And yes, Dr. Smith gets a lot more focus than just being the psychic who can tell when someone's angry while they're stabbing you.
Yeah.
but also redefining things like Bridger, like Ford.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
not
all for the better.
It's the big getting to know the cast episode. And sometimes those are retcons.
So him looking at photos of his wife cuts to, like, Wendy looking at photos of her mom.
This is the legendary sexy Lexi.
She's not sexy.
That is a normal lady. That is a nice looking normal lady.
And the thing is she's in her Navy uniform.
Yes.
I'm like, no, like that don't make it anything better.
If there were some, I don't know, candids or like casual wear, maybe I would see what sexy Lexi is all, like, about. But excuse me, ma'am, that is just a lady.
This is a lady. And she's not bad looking, but it's just a lady. There's nothing that's like, oh. So Tony, Lucas, and Dagwood have gotten to the playground that they were told to go to dig up the pills.
I love that this whole thing starts with, like, Tony throwing Lucas those awful shades and saying, hey, try to look less muggable. And then they ride around in their tourist golf cart. Like, that's the most muggable thing I've ever seen.
Yes, absolutely. Also, like, Tony looks more muggable than Lucas.
If you are driving this, like, fucking puttin' bay ass golf cart anywhere outside of arm's reach of a dock, you deserve to be mugged.
That's why they brought Dagwood.
That is why he might be bulletproof. He's very strong.
So they pull up to this, again, like, this playground, and it's this overgrown, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm,
abandoned
playground. And he's like, oh, my dad used to bring me here. And Dagwood is, like, trying to understand Tony not liking his father.
Yes.
And Lucas is there to be like, well, Dagwood, you can love your father and not like him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, do you love your father and not like him? And he's like, yeah.
All the time.
There's a very complicated thing here, Dagwood. This is like my character arc.
Yeah. So we see these three bonding as the absent dad trio, whereas yeah. Nick Piccolo isn't around because he's a fuck up. Papa Walenchek isn't around because he's fantastically successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is no father for Dagwood because he's not of woman born. He could kill Macbeth, though.
Could.
He could kill Macbeth.
He could, if someone's gonna.
With his grip strength alone.
So Tony starts digging with a tiny-ass spade,
mm-hmm.
But Dagwood, like, comes in there and is like, I got this, and starts using it. But then he just starts, like, karate chopping the dirt.
It's a little bit Sonic Adventure 2 Knuckles level, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he very quickly discovers the package that has a, like, jewelry container inside. That when they unzip it, it's just filled with, like, hundreds and hundreds of loose pills.
Yes, these bright orange, like, the pills are ready to go hunting, you know?
Yes. It's like Motrin.
Yeah, yeah. It might just be Motrin.
They're like Motrin capsules.
But it's in this, like, foil wrapper. It looks like a Chipotle burrito when it first comes out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then, again, it's like a fucking jewelry case or something. Mm-hmm. It is the weirdest thing. It is filled to the brim. Like, this woman has so many drugs.
Just loose in there. Yeah.
Tony's like, okay, we gotta get these to the Sequest. There's a lab there. We gotta test these. And Lucas is like, well, yeah, there's a lab, but, like, you need trained professionals to do that. And Tony's like, well, it's not that different from computers. You can figure it out. And this...
Yeah?
Season one!
Yeah?
Lucas Boy Genius of computers and science.
Yeah.
Knows how to work all science equipment.
He's multiclassing like everyone else on the Sequest.
All of it.
He's messing with sponges.
If it's tech... He can work it.
He's titrating things. Yeah.
So we're going to have a whole scene in a moment where Lucas is like, I don't know how to use any of this equipment that has names of things that I've definitely used before. And it pisses
me the
fuck off.
We're redefining the characters. We're defining and redefining the characters. It's the purpose of the episode.
I don't like it.
I've been talking about how much I don't like this episode for a month leading up to it. And you're like, oh, Tony Piccolo wants to fuck his mom. That's fun. Did you forget the rest of it?
See, the thing is I get lost and I like the moments of Tony arguing with his parents. And yeah. I like Lucas and him teaming up.
A lot of Dagwood one-liners.
And
a lot of
Dagwood,
those.
I like the moments. And I black out on the rest of it, apparently, because I'm so angry.
Frankly, I forgot this was the episode with the hot mom. I just remember it as, that's not my Ford. Give me Ford back. I want Jonathan Ford back. Who is this man? Who is this man wearing Don Franklin's face? I want Ford back.
So before we leave the park, though, Dagwood has to have a little moment being like...
Oh, yeah. They're going for the heartstrings on this one.
As he's looking at the swing set, he's like... No one's ever pushed me on a swing before.
I bet dads would be good for that.
Oh my god! Someone go get Bridger and make him push Dagwood.
His back would go out. He's a very large man.
So, over on the boy boat! Ortiz is annoyed that they haven't picked up chicks yet, because none of them are good enough for Ford or Brody.
They keep talking about their exacting standards, not just physical, but intellectual, spiritual.
And so he's like, fuck all of you, and jumps overboard and swims to the babes.
I imagine that Ford and Brody are just pretending to have such high standards for women, because they don't want to get any women, because they are on a date with each other.
They're certainly acting like it.
And because shipboard romance is such a complicated thing with regulations and rumors and social pressures, they don't want Ortiz to know.
Ortiz would support them. He's very supportive of his friends. Just, like, stop cock-blocking him.
Please. Please. He's so desperate to get his dick wet, he jumped in the ocean. He's doing it literally now.
We gotta go check in on Henderson and O'Neill, who are coming out of a showing of Key Largo in Activision.
Yeah, yeah. Key Largo, of course, the John Huston classic noir with Bogey and Bacall.
Apparently it's very wet. They're very wet when they come out.
They're very
wet
when they come out because of the Activision. This is, I mean, we have 4DX now. We've invented Activision.
Yeah.
O'Neill.
I mean, it existed back then.
Sure, sure. But
Muppets 3D and shit. Like, it existed.
For now. But yeah, they are soaked to the bone watching Humphrey Bogart noir.
Doesn't really seem like it fits.
I mean, they're steamy and then it condenses. And O'Neill is just nerding out about film and how, you know, we used to have like pictures and sound in time. They didn't throw debris at you. What's the insurance like on an Activision theater? Like, what's the size of the debris we're talking?
If you go watch the birds, they actually throw birds at you.
Is there a mechanism or is there a like minimum wage Florida teen hucking rocks at my face and I pay for the privilege?
Maybe. So Henderson's like, oh, stop complaining. Let's get ice cream. And so they do. And she orders them two turtle sundaes and they have sprinkles on them.
Mm-hmm.
That's not turtle sundaes. This bugs me.
Well, the sprinkles are where the turtle is.
There's nothing in the sundaes that they're eating that looks like they are turtle sundaes. They got vanilla soft serve with sprinkles.
Mm-hmm.
And this bugs me so much.
So they're talking and she thought the movie was great. She's having a great time. She thinks this ice cream is great. And O'Neill rolls his eyes at the idea that his date is enjoying herself.
Yes.
What a miserable lump. What is this? What is this? I would say this is the most consistent character from season one, but it's a miserable person.
The thing is like, it's consistent in what you think he'd be like, but he would not be outwardly like this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's not an annoying little brat like this.
He is now.
He's just a dweebus. And so they're walking and there's like a flower stall and he's like, oh, we should get some of these to take to the captain's barbecue. And he's like, we can't like go together.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'll see each other there. But like the we, he's freaking out.
We can't let people know we're dating. I say on my date to my date.
That doesn't go over well.
No, no. And she smooshes his ice cream in his face as they start to argue about whether they're even arguing. And O'Neill gets nasty about whether he's been being nasty.
Yeah.
This ice cream has melted so fast.
It's like they're in the hydroponics chamber.
They really are in Florida, but you can tell. This is just liquid going on his face.
And this is why it also bugs me that it's not actually a turtle sundae, because there's no chocolate, there's no caramel, there's no nuts. It's just vanilla ice cream and sprinkles. What the fuck?
It's a mock turtle sundae.
Are you going to tell me those sprinkles taste like chocolate and caramel and peanuts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah!
It's like the Dippin' Dots of sprinkles.
Yes, it's the future, baby.
Yeah.
So yes, in the Sequest science labs, which are dark, and when they come in here, it looks like they have to blow dust off all the surfaces. We have not been using the science labs.
So they come in, and Tony's like, well, where do we start? Lucas is like, I don't know, maybe med school. And he's like, I don't know how to work any of this. And you know what he does? He sits down at the spectrum analysis, which he's definitely fucking used. He
definitely used the spectrometer, but he's hunting for the user manual as all the lights come on.
And so they turn it on, and apparently when you turn it on, it sends a notice to Wendy that's like, hey, this machine is on.
Someone's doing spectrography over here. What's up with that?
Seems weird, because aren't there more people than just you on this entire boat that would use this machine?
When's the last time you saw a scientist?
I like to pretend that there are some.
They're just hiding. They're in the back. They're just to the left. You don't see them. They're just to the left.
So Wendy comes on in and interrupts them and, like, starts going off on Tony about, like, do you have any idea the efforts to earn an MD and a PhD by 25?
She's having an argument with his brain, which is a fun idea. Because, like, she clearly... Tony Piccolo is thinking some thoughts that we're only seeing on his face and hearing in her responses in this half an argument. And that's fun.
That is fun. I like that. I like how this goes for that and how, you know, she's reacting and you're getting learning it all. And she picks up on the fact of something with his mother and is like, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with your mother? Causes him to, you know. Explain, and she's like, okay, I will help you.
Yeah. My mom's taking these pills. I think they might be dangerous. My dad thinks they might be dangerous, and he's the most irresponsible person I know.
Yes. In this scene, Wendy's fine. This stuff that they're doing with Wendy is good. So many other things aren't.
It's this is also the scene where she talks about her intention to transfer off the Sequest. Because of everyone is talking about the embrace and the piano music, and some people would see it as an impropriety. I know someone in this room who sees it as an impropriety.
And Lucas is like, that is crazy. You shouldn't have to do that. And I just wanted him to be like, you know, my adopted mom also hooked up with my adopted dad on this boat. It's okay. They did it before. I walked in on them, like, hooking up. No one cared. Everyone supported that relationship, look, actually.
They only, like, explicitly dated or smooched when he wasn't the captain anymore. That time for, like, 15 minutes in Whale Song, and then he was the captain again. And then when she was leaving the boat.
So? Everyone was just waiting. Everyone was like, come on.
That's true. That's true. There was a betting pool and everything.
You just need to give it more time. You gotta give everyone more time to come around to this relationship. Let me fill you in on how to do this the right way. She's just like, no, Lucas, I have to leave. I have to leave. It's what's gonna have to happen. But she also gets the results of this analysis and is like, okay, Tony, like, your mom should be fine. Just don't let her take anymore. Gonna send this off to the UEO.
Does the UEO have an FDA?
It's a great question.
Does the United States of America still have an FDA?
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't looked at, like, any social media or news for, like, 45 minutes. There's a chance it's already gone.
So, at the Piccolo home, back on the mainland.
Fucking Jesus Christ.
Papa Piccolo.
Papa Piccolo.
Is using a remote control to make his hedges explode. Yes. I love this, like, wireless hedge trimmer. What's doing the cutting? I don't know. Magnetic fields? Magic? It's awesome. I love it.
Just psh.
Yeah.
It's great. So Tony comes storming on in and is like, hey, do you know what they were doing to her? Did you know that those pills are killing her? That you were killing her? Apparently, the pills were an insecticide.
Yes. And they found an off-label use, which is euthanine. It eats you away, starting with your fat, and then it moves on to your muscles, so your whole body shrinks and gets tight and young.
Sure, that's how that works.
And then you die.
Which during this explanation, his mom comes out and, like, falls to the ground and just like lays in the yard crying.
Yes, yes.
As Tony like explains all this to her. And she's like, but I like the way people look at me. And he's like, but Mom, look at me. I'm looking at you. I need to look at you.
Yeah.
Don't... I need you to be my mom.
Like he says the thing that like you would imagine someone saying to an addict. Don't take my mom away from me.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she has a perhaps psychological, I don't know, dependence on these experimental insecticide pills. So I tried to find Leslie Hope's age or, you know, birth year for her age at the time. And her Wikipedia page doesn't have it, but it does say she graduated college in 1982.
Okay.
So if we assume she was about 21 then, so we can say she's in the early mid 30s when she's playing Mama Piccolo.
Okay. Because I was saying like she looks like 40s, but part of that is like the look. It's the look of the time.
The
it's
hair.
It's the hair.
Yeah.
It's the makeup. It's all that. If you did her makeup and hair like you would today on someone in their 30s, she would look 30.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly.
In her 30s.
Certainly too young to be the mother of Antonio Piccolo.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Does she look 25? Absolutely not. She does not look 25. But so he comforts his mom and is like, you know, I love you. And hey, Nick, she's right. Get a job. And also, like, you should call once in a while. Yeah. Would be nice. Yeah. And he just walks away, said his piece, and leaves.
Meanwhile, at the beach house where Captain Bridger is getting ready to decorate for his big barbecue.
Yes. And so Bridger goes to Darwin and is like, hey, I need you to run this line over there. And Darwin's like, how much? And he's like, what? How much money? What?
So Darwin goes on strike and Bridger strings his own paper lanterns. Gol darn it.
But then there's a boat coming in, and it is Wendy being driven to the island. She has come early.
She gets a chauffeur. Like, this guy drops her off and leaves.
Yes. And she's like, hey, I'm going to transfer off the boat. And he's like, come inside. Let's talk. And so as he gives her an empty cup of coffee...
That's expensive. You can't. It's the thought that counts.
Yeah. That's what it is nowadays, is when they're like, hey, do you want a cup of coffee? They just hand you a coffee mug with no coffee in it.
And just like, imagine.
Just smell the aroma of the coffee that once was. She's like, hey, here's a picture of my grandma. And he's like, I know. I met her.
Anyway, want to make out? That's not weird, right? That's normal.
Also, here's a picture of my mom.
It is. I got some of my own pictures of your mom, if you know what I mean.
She's like, you know.
Carol did not like that I kept those pictures.
She's like, maybe you saw my mother in me.
And he's like, no, that's too weird even for this. I was definitely spending time with you. You are worried about things that don't matter. Anyway.
But why does she seem hopeful that he saw her mother in her? It's like she wants that to be it.
Well, maybe because putting that in the air, he would realize it and say, you're right, we don't have a future, therefore there's no impropriety, therefore you can keep your fucking job.
But it makes it creepy, though. It's fucking weird.
There's a lot of people banging moms in this episode, right? Like, there's a lot of mom banging in this episode. Or would-be mom banging.
Yes.
Mom hoping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Bridger definitely banged her mom.
Yes.
But...
Sexy Lexi.
Maybe grandma, too. I don't know.
Gonna collect the set there, Nate.
And so then Bridger's like, you know, I lost my son and my wife, and you gave me a gift, Wendy. You woke me up to the simple fact I'm alive.
Bridger wants to fuck so bad.
Did Westphalen not make you feel alive, Bridger?
Well, Westphalen got this same speech, and you know what? He sealed the deal. This is a proven technique.
Fucking hate it.
And so they start to slow dance in the sunroom. As Nathan Hale Bridger's only regret is that he has but three Smith women to bang.
My note about the music they're slow dancing to is it's the music that plays in the lobby of the Tower of Terror.
They're in Central Florida. They licensed it.
But then they are interrupted by boat noises.
Boat noises.
And they are being joined by Tony, Lucas, and Dagwood on jet skis.
They used to be the Paella Boys. Now they're the Jet Ski Boys.
Yes. And Tony doesn't waste any time and immediately tickles those ivory keys.
Yeah. He's a one-man party. There is something of a honky-tonk within the heart. Of Tony Piccolo.
Yeah. And then Brody and Ford show up, soon followed by O'Neill and Henderson walking in together. And Ford's like, ha-ha, let me play the wedding march over here, because also know how to play the piano.
And as they're walking in, O'Neill's like, well, now I got to deal with this bullshit for the rest of my life.
And
fuck.
She's like, well, if you live that long...
So the promise of Friday underwear, it crashed and burned pretty quick.
He's wearing them right now, and they're very sad.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get a montage.
She's wearing her stuffed animal down there somehow.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So then we get a montage of Bridger watching the crew interact.
Yeah, it's party time. They're having fun time hangouts.
Tony does, like, circus flips off Dagwood.
Yeah!
Ford and Tony have a piano duet.
Uh-huh.
Dagwood's dancing.
We're making hot dogs, probably synthetic meat. It's Sequest.
There's some dumbass looking at Wendy and just staring at her from across the party.
Uh-huh.
A giant yacht goes by with Ortiz on it with babes.
Captain of the Babe Flotilla, yes!
And this causes Ford and Brody to ditch the party for the babes.
Well, they gotta keep up appearances.
Yeah. And then at the end of the montage, Tony goes to Bridger.
Yeah?
And is like, be my papa too! Lucas said you're a good papa.
He doesn't ask for a papa. He asks for someone who he can tell about his Oedipal yearnings.
Yes!
It's specifically like, hey, I'm having sexual thoughts about my own mother, and I need someone to talk to, and I think you're the guy.
And Bridger's like, you know what? I need someone to talk to, too, because I'm having sexual thoughts about the daughter of the mom I fucked 30 years ago.
They definitely met! She came on a date to the zoo!
So it's supposed to be this, like, nice moment of Bridger being like, yeah, like, let me be the shoulder you need. Let me, you know, help you, young one, in your time of need. But instead it's like, yeah, let's go talk about the very weird sexual feelings we're having towards people we should not be having them towards.
And that's the end of the episode! That's the closing note!
No, because then we get Wendy in silhouette on the beach.
Oh, right.
And Lucas comes up to her and is like, so I heard you're not gonna leave. And she's like, no, I'm not. And he's like, that's good. And there's also a weird tension to this scene as well. And it's fucking weird. And that's the end of the episode. And then we get a repeat of Moose the Manatee for our fish fact.
Yeah, that's right.
It's episode fucking 3 and we're already repeating fish facts.
The third fish fact is just the first fish fact played back. Apparently they don't have that many animals at SeaWorld. They ran out immediately.
See, when I think about this episode, I only think about them at Buddy's.
You just think about the jet ski boys.
I just think about the jet ski boys. I don't want to think about the rest of this damn fucking episode.
Again, this is the first time we're seeing Lonnie Henderson do anything post-Daggers.
Yeah.
Which I don't think set her up for success.
Mm-hmm. The thing that's weird, and it's a little spoilery, I guess, because Lonnie's kind of an annoying character.
Uh-huh.
Some of the stuff they have her do.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationship she has. There are times when it's great. There are some episodes I really like with her. But then there's also, like, she, like, knows herself in this episode, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Of, like, well, no, I think it's great and I'm having a good time. And, yeah. Like, stop being a jerk about this.
I like when they throw water on me at the movie.
Yeah. And I feel like she loses, like, her sense of self in a lot of episodes later.
I think this episode, like, if one of the creative goals of the episode is to find out more about this person as a person.
We know nothing about
her. I still don't think it succeeds.
No.
Because she is just reacting to having a bad date. All we learn about her is she doesn't like it when her date is a snob that treats her as, you know, uncultured and uneducated.
True. Yeah.
She reacts the way any reasonable person would. Like, what are you doing, asshole? Leave me alone. Yes. I'm trying to eat ice cream and have a good time here.
Yes.
And so that doesn't tell us anything about her other than, okay, she isn't a doormat. What is she? I know a few things she isn't. I wish she was proactive.
Yeah.
She's only reactive in this one.
Yeah. It's not great.
Whereas Dr. Smith is proactive. She decides the best thing to do is leave and then is convinced not to because she had so much fun at a barbecue and everyone loves her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something. That's more.
I guess. It's just all so weird and forced. And I mean, and it sucks for the actress that they like.
Sure.
Because like, the as we know from the amount of fan vids out there, the Bridger-Westphalen relationship is so, like, embraced.
Beloved
it's
among
beloved.
The fans.
Yes. So, like, I mean, she is trying to walk through a wall to, like, yeah. gain, you know, the love of anyone.
An uphill battle, to say the least.
Me too.
Yeah.
But... you know, and there's these moments. It's like that moment of her arguing with Tony and getting the snippets. Like, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Don't like that we've made Lucas like a complete idiot when it comes to technology. Uh-huh. But it's just the rest of it is just so much.
Uh-huh. If I'm thinking about this episode as a way to get to know our five new guys,
mm-hmm.
I suppose on that basis, this episode is worst to Brody.
Not as bad as the last one.
That's true. But I don't think Brody needs this episode the way that Henderson does.
No, because Brody's been at the forefront of so many episodes by now.
He is so fully formed in Daggers.
Yes.
Better than any of the newcomers.
Yeah.
And the two in between have been very Dagwood forward.
Yeah.
The writers clearly love Dagwood and all want a turn to play with Dagwood.
Yeah.
So yeah, Brody gets the least, but Brody needs the least, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
He's a simple guy. He's a very self-assured hotshot with wavy hair that apparently has done everything you can do in this Navy.
All of it. He might as well retire at this point.
It's the one thing he hasn't done is retire.
He wants to become an admiral first and then retire. He hasn't worked there long enough to retire, unfortunately. He's trapped until he hits retirement age.
Anyhow, darling, unlike this episode of Sequest, do you have a new fish fact?
I do. I would like to tell our lovely listeners about Nickel.
Should we call our listeners whiskers, like whiskers?
Yes, I want to talk...
Whiskerners?
I want to tell our lovely whiskerners.
I hate this so much already.
Are you listening, whiskerners?
Are you whiskening?
Are you whiskening with your whiskers? So Nickel is our beloved green sea turtle at Shedd Aquarium here in Chicago.
She's my best friend.
I love her so much. Nickel is a rescued turtle that came to Shedd in 2003. And she was found originally in 1998, actually, when a marine biologist spotted her struggling to stay afloat in the Gulf Coast. She had a very deep gash on the rear of her shell from a motorboat propeller.
Buddy.
And she was treated at a rehabilitation center in Florida, but her injuries were causing permanent problems, so she came to Shedd and could not be returned to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
When she arrived at Shedd, during an x-ray, they discovered a 1975 Nickel in her esophagus, which is why she is named Nickel.
You know what? Doesn't say great things for that rescue facility in Florida.
That they did not discover the nickel?
That they didn't find the nickel in her throat.
It does not?
The 5-cent coin from which she takes her name.
No. It was also during a CT scan that they determined that her buoyancy issues, because here's the thing about Nickel. She has a floaty butt.
She has a floaty butt.
She has a floaty butt. Her butt is always higher than her head.
Yes.
It is a permanent neurological injury by her spinal cord,
which causes that.
So she has lots of little issues, but she is living a wonderful, wonderful life at Shed. And a few facts about green sea turtles. They can live to be 90 years old. Green sea turtles can also reach up to 40 miles per hour when swimming, making them the fastest of sea turtles.
Also the only sea turtle I know of that could buy a gumball.
Oh, with the nickel. Gotcha. Green sea turtles in their habitats actually also play an essential role to their ecosystems that they live in.
Mm-hmm.
Because they eat a lot of seagrass. And what they actually do is they trim the tops off the seagrass and leave the rest. So
much like Nick Piccolo with his remote control.
So their feeding technique actually improves the seagrass that is growing in their habitats and allows it to be like thicker and richer and helps because of the way that they eat.
Sea turtles making bonsai out here in the ocean. That's wonderful.
Yeah. So there you go.
Thank you, dear.
Take that, moose. The manatee.
I think you're so cool because you may or may not be the first manatee released from captivity. Gosh.
So what's your sea fact? Or fish fact? Tell our whiskeners. Whiskeners?
I've started a horrible thing.
Whiskeners?
My fish fact is about the fictional drug in this episode. Its developmental name, RU268.
Uh-huh.
Means it was synthesized by the French pharmaceutical company Russell-Uclaf. That's what the RU stands for, Russell-Uclaf.
Okay.
The company was bought in 1997 by its primary investor, Hext AG, and due to more mergers and acquisitions since, is now part of Sanofi. Russell-Uclaf is most famous for RU486. You might know it under its more common name, Mifepristone, the abortion drug and emergency birth control.
Oh!
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
In 1988, when it was brand new, the company board voted to stop distribution due to anti-abortion protests. But 2 days later, the French government ordered it back into production.
Nice.
French Health Minister Claude Evin explained, quote, "I could not permit the abortion debate to deprive women of a product that represents medical progress. From the moment government approval for the drug was granted, RU486 became the moral property of women, not just the property of a drug company."
Fuck yeah.
It was then approved and expanded country to country over the years, including the United States. Once it was licensed to another company for production, getting FDA approval in the year 2000 under the brand name Mifeprex.
I see.
So all of these debates and expansions and country by country approvals is why, if you want an experimental drug in your TV show, you're gonna write in the script RU3 number code.
Yeah.
It's pretty clearly what they were drawing on, because, again, this episode was written, filmed and aired when there was no RU486 in the United States.
Yeah.
Legally.
Mm-hmm.
Drug import laws are weird, as Dom DeLuise's character would like to point out. There's a gray area. He's working in here.
Yeah. That's a good fish fact.
Mm-hmm. With no fish in it.
No fish.
Mm-hmm. Much like the actual show's fish fact, which so far has been marine mammals and not fish.
True. Very true.
Either 2 for 2 or 3 for 3, depending on how you count it.
Yeah.
So thank you all for joining us on yet another Whiskers We Share Knowledge Regarding SeaQuest. I would like to encourage every last one of you to go listen to another show of mine called Bizarre Podcast Space Puppets,
mm-hmm.
where one of my very dearest friends and I are watching Farscape. I have been a Farscape fan for years, and he is just learning about it. Earlier this week, we put up our episode on part one of The Peacekeeper Wars, the big conclusory TV miniseries that was produced out of ideas that would have been season five.
Yes.
If the show weren't canceled. So it is overstuffed and overexpository, but it does become something special. Most of that is in next week's episode. But on Space Puppets, we have a great time talking about the first half that sets up all those climactic events that I appreciate so much.
Mm-hmm.
And while Space Puppets is mostly a premium show for our Patreon backers, this one is out of the paywall for everyone, free to enjoy, and also easy to share, because once you hear this one, you're going to want to hear the rest.
Absolutely.
Number one, it's a great show. Number two, unlike the miniseries, we don't spend time catching new listeners up.
True.
Which is just a lead weight around the neck of the first 20 minutes of Peacekeeper Wars.
Let's tell you about everything that's happened in the past few years.
Let's make a point to name each one of our alien species and a little bit about what's important about us for the plot as we go forward.
Yeah.
I'm going to... oh no, I've been captured by these people who don't know if they like me or not. I better explain the last 4 years of my life to them with clips.
You wouldn't have to do that if you had a psychic.
That's true. That's true.
So yeah, you should check that out.
You should, you should.
You should also go leave us a rating and review whenever mm-hmm. you listen to us. Mm-hmm. If you do that on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review, we're going to read it.
I'm going to read it. I love to read it.
No one's left us one in a while. I feel kind of sad. No one gave me a birthday present yet.
Although, that episode went up yesterday at time of recording.
True.
And there is a lag time between writing the review and it appearing on the storefront.
That's bullshit. Rude.
So there's still time. And hey, not everyone listens on drop day, right? Come on.
Fine. I'll give you all another week. Then I'm going to be mad. So you should also go tell your friends, though.
Uh-huh.
Word of mouth does a lot. It helps new people find us.
Mm-hmm.
You should also follow us on Blue Sky. We are there as Whiskers.
Whiskers.
Lots of fun over there. Lots of good stuff happening.
But yeah, this has been a great time. Next time, we get to, I think, the worst episode of Sequest. In my opinion, I know you like this one. I know you like this next one a lot more than I do.
Oh, it's I do. I do like this one more.
I have personal issues with this next episode of Sequest.
It's not that it's perfect or anything. I'm not going to say it's like a good episode, but it has a lot of Lucas.
It's very Lucas forward.
I love Lucas forward episodes. This one, I like Lucas getting to do stuff.
This next one's for the Lucas lovers.
And I'm a Lucas lover.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I said lover weird.
Yeah. You want to take it again or just go with it?
We'll just go with it.
Okay.
It's been a long week.
So you have that to look forward to, anyhow. But with that,
I'm Elena.
I'm Grant, and in the words of Captain Nathan Bridger,
for beneath the surface lies the future.